Hi, this is Randall Schwartz, host of Floss Weekly. This week, Guillermo Amaral joins me. We're going to talk about Monogame, a way to get your games ported to almost every platform out there. You're not going to want to miss this, so stay tuned.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Floss Weekly is provided by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Floss Weekly with Randall Schwartz and Guillermo Amaral, episode 286, recorded March 5th, 2014, Monogame. It's time for Floss Weekly, the show about free, libre, open-source software. I am your host, Randall Schwartz, Merlin at Stonehenge.com, bringing you each week the movers, the shakers, the big projects, the little projects, the projects you may never have heard of but want to find out more about, the projects you may be using every day and didn't know it. What a great variety of things I get to bring on this show each and every week, or as often as I can. I'm keeping it pretty close to weekly recently, so doing a pretty good job there. Joining me this week is a relatively new co-host, but he's back for his, I think, third time now, Guillermo Amaral. Welcome back to the show.
Hey, man. How's it going?
Going well. And where are you speaking to us from? Same place as before, I presume?
Yeah. Tijuana, Mexico, in my man cave slash lab.
Yeah? Are you drinking a margarita this early or no?
No, it's actually water in a coffee cup.
Oh, okay, cool. All right, well, that sounds awesome. Welcome back to the show. We brought you on because this week's guest is about gaming and about creating games. And I understand you have a little bit to do with that. Well, let me first introduce the topic here. We're going to talk about Monogame, which is a way of taking games that were originally ported to Windows or the Xbox with the XNA architecture, as best I understand it, and be able to actually port them to all sorts of other platforms like Linux and Mac and modern Windows, which apparently stopped support for XNA, and also even the platforms like iOS and Android, and what's the other one? The PlayStation Portable. I think that's the entire list, or maybe not. Well, we'll see. I guess what do you know about this so far, Guillermo?
Well, Monogame seems like a really interesting project, especially for people, you know, creating C-sharp games or creating games for the Xbox that they might want to, start using in other platforms, including Linux, which is, you know, my main platform here.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
And,
go ahead.
Okay. Oh, well, and you mentioned before, like, what I know about this whole area. I started my own game console a while back and my own game engine. So I kind of like this whole cross-platform game engine stuff. So I'm really excited.
Yeah, because I know that's got to be one of the problems is that, you know, you have all these multiple platforms, and how do you write it once and run it everywhere? And I know there's probably a few solutions in the space. We'll get to ask them about maybe what some of their competitors are doing. But rather than us just speculating, before we go on, for those who recognize the slight change in the background again, I am actually home in my apartment in Beaverton, Oregon, and I'm using the Blue Yeti, not the Blue Yeti Pro, in case you hear any slight sound differences. I've been told there isn't any. I think it's just in my own feedback. I can hear it up here, but that's how it works. So I'm home for a week, and I'll be back again on the road next week. So taking my portable studio with me. But again, this is not this week in Randall's location. This is Floss Weekly. Not this week in anything. Floss Weekly. So let's go ahead and bring on our guest, Tom Spillman. Welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having us, guys.
Cool. And where are you speaking to us from?
I'm speaking to you from, I guess, not sunny Dallas, Texas right now.
Central time zone. So one over,
yes.
I guess. No, two over, I guess. Right. Wait, I can never remember.
Yes, two over.
Two over, okay. Two over, one down. Okay, cool. And let's also bring on our other co-host, the guest. It's too early in the morning. The caffeine is not kicked in yet. The guest, Dominique Louise, I hope. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Thank you, Randall. Thanks for having me on the show. I'm calling in from London, UK at the moment.
All right, cool. There's slightly delay also getting from here to there, and I keep remembering that when I don't stamp on people's talking. Well, let's go ahead and bring Tom back. And Tom, sort of give us the 30,000-foot view. Did I get that pretty close on what Monogame's all about?
Yes, you were really close. So, yeah, so Monogame is a cross-platform managed language game framework. So it was originally started, originally this all started back in 2005, 2006 when Microsoft released XNA, which was their push for using managed languages for doing game development. That's managed languages meaning C#, Visual Basic, all the .NET sort of languages. So that's where it started. Sometime a little later, some guys had the idea of like, hey, I really like this language and this platform. I'd like to try to do this on other platforms other than Microsoft platforms. And that's how MonoGame was started.
Ah, okay. Were you involved with it back then?
No, Dominic was, though.
Oh, okay, cool. I'll talk to him about the beginnings of that. But so describe to me what, you know, I see XNA, but I'm not quite sure what that means. It's about managed languages, but mm-hmm. were there similar frameworks before that that helped people develop like a cross between Windows and Xbox?
Not really. I mean, not like this. When XNA started, it was one of the first kind of managed languages for game development. There were some other things that Microsoft did early on. They had a managed DirectX, you know, sometime really early, but that kind of fizzled out. And this was kind of like a new push that originally the big draw to it was that you could not only develop games that worked on the PC, but you could also deploy games to your Xbox 360, which was at the time kind of unheard of, that you could deploy your own games to a retail console, you know, without having to spend a lot of money and get into an agreement with a publisher or the platform holder to be able to deploy to that console. So that was the big attraction at the time, and a lot of people jumped in because of that, being able to see their games running on a 360 on their TV in their living room. So that's really where it began. But it is just a framework. It's not an engine. It's really for coders more than designers, even though I've talked to designers that have used it and claim they don't know how to code, but somehow produce some awesome games.
Okay, so I'm a bit unaware of the distinction, coder and designer, or is that the difference between people who write programs versus people who actually sort of lay out a virtual world with all of the cool things in it?
Right. I mean, it definitely is something that you have to be a programmer to jump into. And in fact, predominantly, it seems like most of the people that jump into MonoGame are people that really want to be able to write code, want to be able to write their low-level systems and things like that, and don't want to just be handed a system and just accept what's, you know, how their the existing system in this other, you know, engine would work, right? So it gives you kind of a lower level control than you normally would have, but still in a managed language, which gives you, you know, all the benefits of that.
So what does this look like in terms of a development stack? Is this like the lowest layer that interfaces with whatever hardware and other architectures behind it? And then you still need like a sort of a physics engine on top of this, and then maybe some sort of rendering engine on top of that? Or what parts of this does this actually provide?
So what MonoGame provides is the graphics stack. So it's kind of like, it's an abstraction, right? So it provides you an abstraction where you can say, hey, graphics device, I want to render these triangles. And it takes care of DirectX or OpenGL or anything else under the hood for you. So you don't need to know the specifics of that. So it has a graphics stack. It has a sound stack. So you can play sound effects and play music and you don't have to worry about the platform details. It has input, so you can say, hey, I want touch input, or I want mouse input, or keyboard, or game pads, or joysticks, and you don't have to worry about the platform details. It also does content, so, you know, it has a pipeline in there for being able to bring in your 3D models, your textures, your sound effects, and under the hood, it takes care of converting those to platform-optimized formats, so you don't have to worry about those details as well. So it kind of covers, like, the basic things that you would see in a lower level, you know, game library. The higher level things like physics engines, you know, UI systems, those kinds of things are those higher level things are really handled by other libraries. But there are lots of choices out there. You know, if we picked one physics library, most likely someone would want someone else. So it's easier for us to deal with the low level abstractions and let the higher level stuff, which is kind of platform agnostic, be handled by other managed libraries. And so far, that's worked out really well.
So at the lowest level, you're saying that if I had a 3D model of a house and it had certain, you know, color paints on it or, you know, certain masks applied to it, I could hand that to this library and then also say, well, I'm at XYZ in space looking this direction, and it would figure out what models would have to be brought in and how those would then be given to the low-level, you know, WebGL or not WebGL, but like the things you were talking about in terms of rendering that.
Yeah, it's a little lower level than that. I mean, that's kind of like a more retained mode engine where you kind of just say, here's my camera, and you render everything. This is a little lower level. You really have to do You have to decide, hey, where I'm going to put my camera. Here's the transform for the camera. Here's the these are the things that are visible from the scene. Now, it has a lot of library code to help you deal with that stuff, but it still is up to you to kind of build it. So really, you would build an engine on top of this. You really wouldn't use this as an engine directly, right? So so there's work that you want to do, and it's really good for people that actually want to, you know, develop that stuff, because there's lots of different choices on how to do it.
Does that mean I could take something like, well, this is going to date me, but like something like the Doom engine or whatever, and put this on top of this and be able to play Doom games inside this framework?
Yeah, I mean, you could. I wouldn't recommend it. It would be an interesting exercise, I guess. No, but I mean, but you wouldn't take like an engine and put this on top of it. You really would write an engine around it, you know, and several teams have done that, you know, from professionals to indies. So, so yes, sort of like that, but not like taking an established engine.
So does that mean there's also an open source stack above this then? So I could build an entire game using open source software, or am I going to run into places where I have to actually pay for software to do more things?
Well, you have choices, right? You know, there's a great open source community out there, and there's lots of open source libraries that, you know, that we use on a regular basis. You know, there are physics engines, there's lower level graphics bindings that we actually use inside of MonoGame itself. There are, you know, UI libraries, some that are open source, some that are paid for. So it's kind of like you get to pick and choose, right? You know, you can decide what fits your project best.
And what brought you to be playing with MonoGame?
So it was the December before Windows 8 like officially shipped, and we had an existing game on that was using XNA, and we were looking to try to port the thing over to Windows 8 and make it available in the store early. And of course, the XNA library, Microsoft's official XNA library, wasn't supported on Windows 8, mostly because that team had already been disbanded and there was no one there to update it to the latest stuff. And it was a low priority at the time. So we started looking for alternatives. While a lot of people were pushing, hey, just go to C++ and just write to DirectX directly and just rewrite your game that way, we wanted to try to leverage what we already had in the managed language. We had a lot of technology, a big technology stack around it already. We wanted to leverage that and move forward. So what we ended up doing was we looked around and we finally came across MonoGame. At the time, MonoGame only supported GL platforms. It had GL for desktop, you know, Linux, Mac, and Windows as well. It had GL on Android and iOS, but it didn't have anything on the DirectX side of things, which is what was needed for Windows 8. So after evaluating, we found, you know, and throwing a couple emails at them, they were really friendly. They were willing to accept any changes, you know, readily. So it made it easy for us to make a decision to jump in there and provide the DirectX stack and provide a Windows 8 port. So within two or three months, we had a version of it running under Windows 8 that we pushed back into the repository through GitHub. And, you know, a couple months later, we had shipped the game onto Windows 8, like one of the first games on Windows 8 that was all managed language. So it was really successful for us. You know, within the 4-month period, we went from not having a solution to having a solution. And since then, you know, dozens of games have shipped on Windows 8, dozens of games have shipped on Windows Phone 8, which, you know, because of the work that we did on porting it to Windows 8, it made it easy to provide other DirectX platforms. So that gave us the ability to add a DirectX desktop version, a DirectX version for Windows Phone 8, and hopefully more in the future. So it really opened up a lot of channels at that time, but that's basically how we got involved. And since then, you know, we've started to help maintain it more and more.
Cool, very cool. And that obviously shows the power of, you know, leveraging off open source and still getting what you need out of the equation by giving in. Like, it's a potluck. You bring some stuff and then you get all the stuff. So
exactly. You know, and that's what we saw it as. You know, we felt that that's how I looked at it. Like, it felt like, you know what, there was a lot here. If we had to do this ourselves, it would take a long time. There's a lot here to work from. All I need to do is exert a little bit of effort and add this other piece in and make it available to everybody, and then I'd reap the benefits as people found bugs and fixed issues or added new features and new platforms that weren't there originally. So we found that it was great for doing that. And the fact that we could actually do it in the first place was tremendous, right? Like, if we had gone with a third-party game engine that was paid for, we would have to have waited. Like, you know, there are other popular engines that were out there that took, you know, over a year after Windows 8 shipped to actually have something available for that platform. So having full control of your source code and be able to change it is tremendously powerful. And it's something that, you know, can't be overlooked.
Very cool. Well, I've let Tom talk for a bit. Let's, Dominique, you've been involved with since the beginning. What was that like?
I wasn't involved since the very, very beginning. There was a guy called Jose from Brazil who started the project initially, and it was called XNA Touch back then. I'd been using XNA in early 2000, well, when it was first released, had moved away from it, but then I started hearing about iOS development and wanted to try and get my hand into that basket, as it were. Mm-hmm. And so I looked around and saw that XNA Touch existed and started helping out Jose. And so I was working on the iOS port, helping him out. He eventually moved on to using Unity, and I took over the project, essentially, and continued working on the iOS port, and then various other people started helping get an Android port in, like Dean, and Kenneth helped with a Mac port. And then we had Linux running. And then, as Tom mentioned, a couple of years later, he came along and with the Windows 8 port, and it's never looked back, really. So that's essentially where I've been part of the project.
And for those of us who aren't familiar with Unity, it's a commercial platform that allows you to port, is it games across some platforms?
Yeah, it's essentially an IDE, a graphical IDE that allows you to more or less drag and drop. You still have to script certain parts of your AI and whatnot in order to get the functionality you need. But it is a much higher level than, say, Monogame XNA is. So... as pointed out, you're tied in with when they decide to ship to a platform. I think Tom was being very diplomatic when he said, another competitor took a year to get to Windows 8. That was essentially Unity. We were there at launch, thanks to Tom's amazing work, and they took another year before they were ready. Yep, sorry. So I was just going to say, yeah, so the power of, as Tom mentioned, the power of having the code in your own hands and deciding when you want to be ready for a particular platform.
Right. So I'm just curious then. So have you been doing work on Monogame as part of your day job, or is this nights and weekends for you, or some combination of the three?
Since the very beginning, it's been a part-time thing. Unfortunately, in the last couple of years, day work has taken over more and more of my life. So I've spent less time on Monogame than I'd wanted to. I've moved more to doing more evangelizing type stuff, talking at developer conferences and the like. But so there's less coding from my side. But it has been essentially a part-time effort so far.
So is this a, I'm not sure if you guys haven't actually mentioned this. Is this a 2D or 3D game engine? Or can it do both?
It can do both. It's essentially the API supports both the 2D. Initially, at the very start, we only supported the 2D API for XNA. With Tom and various other people's help, we've gotten the 3D stack working. So there's games out there using it for both now. One example is Infinite Flight, which is a flight simulator that runs on iOS and Android and also Windows Phone. So that's a full 3D flight simulator that pilots use as well.
So is it feasible for somebody with an XNA game out there right now to port to Monogame and just be able to go? Do you guys have any limitations?
We're not. I'd say we're still not 100%. XNA 3D API compatible, but we're quite close. Tom, who's probably delved into the 3D side more recently, is probably able to give more details there.
Sure. For the most part, I would say that the vast majority of XNA games would port over without any trouble. You might run across an API that isn't filled out, but hey, there's an easy solution. Fork the code, make the change, commit it back, and send us a pull request, right? So for the most part, it's easy to address those issues if you run into them. And usually if you just post a bug to the GitHub issues, we're able to look at it and somebody can jump in there when they have some time and address it. But for the most part, everybody's kind of there's a lot of self-serving parts of this, right? You go in there and fix the bits that you need. And the fact that we have enough people doing that keeps the project going and keeps us adding new features. So for the most part, yes. I mean, we've heard people that, you know, took, you know, a day and converted over the existing XNA game and got it running on iOS or Android or Linux or Mac. So it's pretty straightforward.
So do you guys have any extensions? Do you bring anything into, you know, into the API that, you know, vanilla XNA doesn't bring?
Yes, we've actually started doing that here and there, you know, addressing, you know, some small issues like places where XNA was doing things that artificially created, you know, more memory allocations or adding features that weren't originally there but were very convenient for mobile. So there are things like that that we have added, but we've been careful to add them in a way that didn't break existing XNA functionality. At some point, we'll probably start making a bigger and bigger break from the XNA API. I mean, at this point, the XNA API is, I mean, XNA itself is almost 10 years old, and the API, which the last revision of that was like in 2009, 2010, you know, when the Windows Phone 7 came out, you know, it's starting to become a little dated. So we're looking towards how to expand the API into the future now. But again, the old code is always available. So if you still needed that pure XNA experience, it'll still be there.
And that makes sense in terms of the fact that, you know, that because the API is so old, they wouldn't have taken into consideration things like, say, the back touchpad on PlayStation Vita. So we have an opportunity there to enhance the API, to add that sort of feature set, you know, if we're given low enough access to it.
So what happens if I remember Randall mentioning before that XNA support got you know, pulled out of the newer Windows releases and Xbox. What happens when somebody, you know, wants to port their game to like a newer type of Windows? Or is the XNA support really gone? Is it completely gone? Or can you guys fill in that gap?
That's what we're doing. We're filling that gap. So, I mean, it's, you know, they'll say, well, they killed XNA. They didn't kill XNA. XNA is available. You can put it on, you know, billions of PCs right now and run it. It's just not available on the Windows 8, the new Windows 8 APIs, where they changed some of the requirements. Mostly, XNA used to be based on DirectX, was based on DirectX 9, and there's a DX11 requirement for the newer platforms. So that's why that has never translated across. But we've replaced that. So now if you want to build an XNA game and get it on Windows 8 or Windows Phone 8, you know, you basically go through us and you have an equivalent API that works on those platforms and more. At that point, once you ported it, you have an easy jump to iOS, you have an easy jump to Android, you have an easy jump to the Ouya game console and other platforms.
Okay, I wasn't sure if when you guys said ported to Windows 8, you just meant like DirectX, adding the DirectX calls in there. So it actually means replacing the whole API?
Yes, it's a full API replacement. So we, from scratch, it was rewritten basically, you know, to provide the same APIs and the same functionality, but a whole new implementation of it.
So let's say I'm a big Linux, you know, user and developer, and I know other people who are, you know, BSD and, you know, a lot of mm-hmm. Unix and Mac OS, let's say. Mm-hmm. If I wanted to create a game for Mono Develop, do I actually need to use Windows or maybe Visual Studio to do it, or can I use some open source tools?
You can still use open source tools. There's some limitations that we've had in the past, mostly around content processing, content being like your textures and your sounds and things like that. We're still very dependent on Microsoft's XNA's content pipeline for a long time. We're really close now to having that completely replaced as well, which is a pretty huge undertaking, especially for people that are doing it on nights and weekends. So we're at the point where we're about to be completely split off from that. So so yes, you can do it completely with open source tools now, but you can also do even more here soon, and it'll be even easier.
So Gray580 from the chat is asking, if you can use this on iOS, could you also make applications and not just games for it?
Using Monogame, you can make apps if you want to, because then you've got full control of the UI. But typically, if you're writing an app, you want it to have an iOS feel. So you would tend to use your UI labels and the UI kit that is Apple specific. So it is possible to do, and I believe there was a recent talks using Monogame to provide rich UI a couple of days ago. I've forgotten the link right now, but it is possible. But typically, if you're an app developer, you want whether it be an Android app to have the look and feel of that, of being native on Android rather than a generic UI. A UI that is game specific, you want that immerses you within the game. So that's where it's important. But in terms of an app, that's not necessarily the best thing.
And it depends on the app, right?
It does.
I mean, I think I saw one. There was one that I saw that was like some sort of audio visualizer. And if for something like that, we're going to do a lot of graphical effects, it makes sense. There are people that have combined, native UI elements with the graphics and gotten something in there. There's also things like, I think I saw on Windows 8, in fact, I think I saw someone did like a network analyzer using Monogame. And I think it was so he could draw like really fancy graphs and really neat looking visualizations of network traffic and things like that. So it's totally possible. It just depends on your app and your needs.
Yeah, if you could like fly through your network, like what was that show that was it Hackers or something? No, what was the show where they're like looking for the people?
Every hacking movie in the 90s.
Oh, that's true. That's true. Yeah. Why am I even narrowing that down? It's true. They're always because it's like networks are boring to most people. They got to have a visual to be able to pull along the audience, right?
So it's usually that you're flying through a 3D library looking for information, or you're cracking a bank vault, to get into the computer or something. It's always some wacky visualization like that.
Right. And on their laptop, like, okay, I'm going to burn all the CPU cycles and my battery just showing how this packet is pinging this other machine over here.
Ridiculous. But if you wanted to build an app like that, you could totally do it.
Good. Well, now I'll know what to reach for. I'm sort of curious as a programmer, so there's how this is actually structured. So, like, we've got this core of stuff that you guys are all working on. I'm presuming that's written in C# or something equivalent to it. What is the glue that lets me put this both on Android, which is sort of native Java, as I recall, and iOS, which is native Objective-C? How do you bridge those on these different platforms that you're porting to?
Right. I mean, there's a couple different things. So one, so you're writing in C# and writing against our API, which is basically C# API, right? I think I've seen people actually use F# with it as well, which is really interesting. That's kind of a popular language at this moment. I've even seen somebody try to use it with Visual Basic, which is crazy to me, but somebody has. So you write using that, and then under the hood, what we're doing is we're mostly like 90% of our code is all just plain J and C#, not even platform specific, very generic C#. Mm-hmm. There are a couple places where we get platform specific down when we're talking to like the graphics device, we're talking to input devices, things like that. And in those places, we have some different, if-def kind of branches for different platforms. Under that, we have bindings usually that talk from C# to the native APIs. And there's like on DirectX, we use one called SharpDX, which is an excellent wrapper around DirectX that's been made available. It's open source. It's fantastic. I can't recommend it enough. It provides us that jump from C# to the C++ API for DirectX. Then even further than that, if you're talking about iOS or Android, what we use is we depend on Xamarin's products that let you build C# applications on Android and iOS. And Dom can speak a little bit about that, I guess.
And so essentially they would talk to OpenTK, which is a C# wrapper around OpenGL ES under iOS and Android. So there's always an abstraction layer that then talks to the native stuff under the hood.
Okay. So there is some sort of common thing that you guys are all working on, but then there's also these nice little interface layers, like probably the stuff that that Tom, you had to bring to it in order to make it talk to Windows 8.
Right, exactly. And that was like our first experience with it, really. I mean, we went in there and, you know, if we had to do this ourselves, we'd have to rewrite a ton of APIs. The fact that we could go in there and just snipe, you know, the little bits that needed to be, you know, specific to Windows and fix those, that allowed us to do as quickly as possible, do this port. You know, if it was that we had to write the whole thing, it would have taken forever. You know, so it was tremendously beneficial to us to be able to do that. And the fact that we even could, because there was an open source implementation of it.
Cool. And another sort of to follow up the XNA is dead question. So this was based originally around the XNA specification. The XNA specification changed over time, and I'm sure that was kept track. First off, did Microsoft have any problems with you guys using the XNA specification as the interface for your applications?
Not that they've told us.
And we've been invited several times to meet. For example, last year, another team member and I, Dean, were on the Microsoft stand at Develop in Brighton. So they're very supportive so far, and we're talking to them about taking Monogame to other parts. So
does this mean, though, that the XNA specification itself is probably never going to migrate forward? Or, I mean, regardless whether there's code behind it, that's probably not being discussed. It's really like what you end up with Monogame is basically like the most portable implementation of what was called XNA.
Correct. Yes. Exactly. You know, we've talked with them in the past, you know, about different options there. I mean, they've always been really friendly and easy to work with for the most part. But again, it's a big corporate machine, so there's a lot of moving parts. So you can't always get things moving as quickly as you'd like. But they've been really, really easy to work with.
Now, does that also mean that going out in the future, I understand you said you're adding APIs that are sort of beyond the original specification. Are you going to be adding things for more bizarre input devices, like, say, 3D headsets and maybe spatial sound, multi-channel output sound? It's probably already supported, but are you going to keep looking at I/O devices as they come out on more platforms and try to support that with this?
To some extent, I mean, there's obviously it's an open source project, so a lot of people contribute. So there's usually some debate around a lot of things like this to come to a good decision. But for the most part, yes, it just depends. Like the 3D headsets, really, at this moment, there's no reason why you couldn't write something using Monogame for, you know, an Oculus Rift. It would totally function. I'm sure somebody's already done it, because really all it takes is convert some shaders over and render in the right way, and it works. You know, as far as like getting the 3D positional data, they have APIs. It would just take someone writing a binding for that API to provide the C# layers. So it would totally be possible without us doing any work within Monogame itself. And there's always a question about what do you add in. You know, if you add in something that only works on one platform, it's hard to kind of keep it as a cross-platform library, because then you get all these bits on the edges that, you know, are different everywhere. So unless you start seeing more and more 3D headsets and we can find some common API that we can plug into that works in lots of places, it's kind of hard to just pull it in just for one platform and one device. But, you know, we can try. It just depends on what becomes common. I think that for the most part, we're going to try to stay low level and the most common bits. You know, if we start, you know, like people ask us to add physics engines and things like that, it's like the second that we do that, we're going to run into trouble, because there's dozens of different physics engines for different needs. And if we start adding one, then what about this other one? And what about that other one? And there's a lot of difficulty in trying to make that common in some way. So for the most part, we've stayed out of that. But we are looking to add common bits where it does make sense. And there's some new techniques and graphics and some new techniques that we could be doing in sound and input that we could improve upon the existing API. So that's probably where we're going to focus our time. And then making sure that we're very interoperable with these other libraries, you know, and so far we've had a pretty good, you know, run at that.
Have you been able to reveal bugs in the APIs you're given in each of these platforms and gotten those fixed upstream?
We have in a couple cases, not too many cases. I mean, a lot of people hammer against these APIs, not just us. So it's, you know, a lot of stuff like that happens. And then depending on the API and who you're working with, it could take time or not. It just depends, right? So, but we have run into those kinds of things, and it you know, but that's the kind of like any game developer would run into those things, right? It's you run them up the chain and hopefully you get it fixed, you know. Luckily, it's not like a driver bug or something like that, because, you know, those take time and it's kind of hard to get those resolved. Usually you end up working around them.
Yeah, I bet. So, because, you know, you can't wait for them to be updated on the platforms, obviously.
And plus, you can't guarantee that every user is going to update their device, right? They're not going to update their drivers, and you're stuck with them. So, for the most part, as game developers, right, you run into problems like that, you just basically wire around it.
Right. So, you spoke a little bit earlier about, like, the future and what you sort of see there. How does the governance for this work? Is it a benevolent dictator like you, or is it some sort of committee that decides what comes future, or is it like patches welcome and we just pick the best patches?
A benevolent dictatorial committee?
Okay.
I don't know. there's a smaller core of us that, you know, have been contributing for a couple of years and that usually chat about these things. There are people that don't contribute on a regular basis, but have contributed good bits and are really experienced that we, you know, we get feedback from. But at the same time, we get a lot of pull requests, and we have to, you know, evaluate them and decide, does this work? You know, one of the things that we struggle with sometimes is deciding what is a good fix and what is not going to break some other platform. So it's tricky when the APIs become bigger and bigger. And we're trying to improve some of those things, get some better systems for testing those things. But for the most part, it's kind of like it's on a case-by-case basis, you know, depending on what it is. You know, it's like any other open source project. If you submit like a big change, it has tons of different elements and it changes 20 different APIs and they're all not related and some things are questionable but some things are straightforward, it's a hard thing to kind of pull in. If it's a case where you're working on something that is like, hey, I found this bug in this, you know, this little chunk of code and I can change this one little thing and it fixes it and it's obvious, it's like that'll be in 5 minutes. So it kind of depends on the kind of changes you submit. I mean, I think that for the most part, every open source project would prefer to get smaller, more focused, you know, pull requests, you know, so that you can, they're easy to test, they're easy to evaluate, and they're easy to get merged in.
Cool. And my co-host is whispering in my ear, do not forget about the license. What's the license that this is released under?
It's Microsoft PL, I think is what it is. Is that correct, Tom?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yep, that is correct. That is what it is at the moment.
I don't even know what that means, so I hope hopefully it's an open source license of some kind.
It's an open source license. It's Microsoft's version of LGPL, or is it more? It's somewhere between LGPL and BSD license. It pretty much is use it like you want. Put it on commercial products. Just don't change our copyright.
Yeah, that's basically summed up. Yep.
Okay, so I was worried that it was this crazy Microsoft public source license where you can look at it, but you can't use it.
No, that's not exactly
not at all.
No, that would not be very useful. I mean, I think Microsoft only uses that on like code they really don't want you to use. It's just there for example and to give people reference concepts, right? But they have a bunch of other open source licenses, and this one is just one that they came out with that is very, very lenient and very open. So that was adopted a long time ago, and, you know, it's worked great for us. I mean, without it, you wouldn't be able to get somebody to say, hey, I ported this thing, and now it runs on, you know, I think one of the guys was working on, what do you call it? God, I totally forgot. The little micro Linux PCs. What are those things called? I forgot. Raspberry Pi.
Raspberry Pi.
You wouldn't be able to port to something like that if it was just closed and you couldn't really modify it. So it's kind of defeats the purpose, right? So. Yeah, it's very open and permissive.
Great. That's good to hear, because I remember there was this controversy about, you know, Microsoft going open source in spirit, and that they were showing sections of the Windows software, but it was sort of a look but don't touch, and you can't use it for anything. And I was like, well, it's Windows. Why would I want to use it for anything? So probably it's okay that I can't actually use it. We have a question. Sorry, go ahead.
Good. I was going to say, they're different cases, right? Microsoft has some great open source stuff that's out there, and then they have some stuff that is like that as well. So it depends on the division and what the priorities are there.
So we have a question from the chat room. I don't totally understand it. It might have already been answered. ESOL asks, since I have some knowledge in the XNA environment, does Monogame use similar constructs like XNA's content pipeline and game components?
Yes, it does, essentially. We've tried to stay as essentially a namespace and API compatible with everything that XNA provided, so that it would be an easy port process. So yes, to answer his question, it uses the same content pipeline constructs the same calls, etc.
Cool. And I also had a question. I don't remember exactly. I can't scroll back quick enough. About PS4. Are you looking at PS4?
We can't talk about that.
Oh. Well, I'll take that as sort of cool, and we'll just have to wait and bring it back on in a year or so.
Sure.
Sorry about that. I understand. Okay, cool. I'm just about running out of questions. We're also just about running out of time. Guillermo, do you have anything further for our guests?
No, I think most of the questions we've actually talked about have answered my, everything I had regarding Mono Game. That's great.
I would like to know, so you've mentioned a few sort of upcoming things, except the one you can't talk about. What else is coming up for Mono Game?
I can't talk about a couple of things. Like one, there's a game coming out on the 11th called Towerfall Ascension. It's a pretty popular game. It's going to be available on PS4 on the 11th up against Titanfall. So that's going to mm-hmm. be interesting. And it's one of the first Mono Game titles that are on the PlayStation. We're going to GDC here. There's going to be some different gatherings and meetups at GDC. If anybody wants to talk to me, I think my Twitter handle will be in the show notes. You can always get together with us and talk about it. We're working on a new website at the moment, which is going to be nicer than the current one that we have, and a new community site. So that's coming up. I think it's about it for right now. We can only plan out a couple months in the future. So, but I'm sure we'll be at some other conferences and stuff like that in the coming year.
Cool. And, so what are some of the recognizable games? You mentioned the flight, was it Unlimited Flight, Flight Unlimited, something?
Infinite Flight.
Infinite Flight, sorry.
Yeah. So, I mean, if you go to the monogame.net/showcase page, you'll see that we have a few things like Fez, by Polytron, Bastion, by Supergiant Games, Skull of the Shoguns, Draw Stickman Epic, just to name a few quite high-profile games that are on various platforms.
Right. Fez was a pretty huge game at the time when it came out, and they Polytron was able to use it to get to Linux and Mac. Bastion has been like on almost every platform. The Supergiant guys are great, and they even contributed back code. They contributed a whole port to Google's native client, and you can go to the Google Chrome store and pick up a copy of Bastion that runs in your browser, and that's all using Mono Game on top of the native client stuff. There's other than Towerfall coming out on the 11th. On PS4, there's also Mercenary Kings, which is me coming out on the PS4. There's also Supergiant's new game,
Transistor.
That's coming out. Mm-hmm. It's coming out later this year on PS4, also using Mono Game. Every day we're getting notes about iOS games and Android games and Windows 8 games on the tablet and Windows 8 games on the phone that are shipping using Mono Game. I couldn't tell you exactly how many games are out there. We haven't kept that close a track, but, there are hundreds easily.
So I'm also curious, then. So, like, if you're porting a game to Linux, what do I have to install prerequisites, or does this come as, like, a bundle that just drops in and just runs like every other app that I download?
The Linux path is still, the rougher path. The paths that are easier are usually the paths that are more popular a lot of times. Mm-hmm. For us, it's kind of the normal kind of fall off of open source. It's Windows, then Mac, then Linux. And those are kind of like the order of operations as far as like the popularity and how quickly things get updated and fixed. So for the most part on Linux, it's pretty much like go to GitHub, grab our source. You can build it, install Mono, develop. You can build it at that point, and you can totally deploy for Linux and make it work. You can also develop on Windows to build for Linux as well, and I think some people have done that. It's pretty straightforward.
Okay, that sounds cool. Well, we're just about out of time. I got a question from the chat room again. What sort of people are you looking for? What are your biggest gaps in resources in terms of skill sets and people who want to contribute?
Linux people, we could definitely use that. I mean, that's something that it's out of my comfort zone, and we can always use people helping on that platform. In particular, like right now, we're trying to get all our, make our installation processes easier and more straightforward. And especially on something like Linux, we'd like to try to get that easier. Mac, we can use some help there. on the Windows side, that's, you know, usually where we have the most help. But, you know, whatever you can come in there and contribute, you know, we're always looking for help. You know, just jump into the forums, talk to us, you know, give us a heads up on what you're working on just to make sure that, you know, it's in the right vein and it's something that we're looking for. And, you know, get in there and do it. You know, for the most part, the, you know, just use it. And as you run into problems, you know, chat about them, talk about them, and let's get fixes in.
And I presume you're I was just going to add,
and if there's anybody out there who's passionate about the PlayStation Vita and the PSM API, the 2D API is basically functional, but it would be nice if somebody could spend some quality time getting the 3D working, though it's not pretty from sitting on top of the Sony API. So, but it would be nice if somebody could contribute there as well.
And I presume that you're doing your code repository somewhere out in the open and that you probably have a bug tracker nearby that?
Mm-hmm. It's all on GitHub. Yep.
Okay, GitHub, so I can look at that.
/mono/monogame.
So I could look at that and see, for example, there's a bug on something that I might have some expertise on and I might be able to contribute the solution for that.
Absolutely.
Cool. Well, it's been great having you guys on. I have a couple more questions for each of you. If you've seen the show before, you know the questions coming up. So I'll start first with Tom. Tom, what is your favorite text editor?
My favorite text editor. Does Notepad count? I'm sorry. I'm a Windows guy. Actually, I think I'm using Edit++ for just text editor. But really, my very, very favorite text editor, it's called Visual Studio. Look it up.
Sure. Yeah, I've heard of that. Okay. And your favorite programming? Well, let's see. I usually say scripting language, but I don't think there's a lot of those in the Windows side except Bat, right? So,
yeah, I mean, there's stuff. But, you know, if you want to say scripting language, you know, on Windows, batch files, I still love them. I still use them, you know. I've been doing writing batch files for almost 20 years. So I'm very, very glad with using that. It's very familiar and comfortable. But, you know, another thing on text editors, I guess I can say I like Nano, I guess, on Linux every time I use it. So that's for the most part. Yeah.
There you go, because that's an Emacs sort of micro version of that. So, yay.
Yeah.
I like that. Okay, and Dominique, same two questions. What's your favorite text editor?
Well, I haven't used it for a while, but Edlin, back in the day, would have been quite useful.
Is that a GNU or?
It's very no. It was like DOS, yeah. Really early DOS.
Definitely dating yourself.
Text editor. Yeah, definitely. Showing my age. And the second question was again.
Scripting language.
I've been sort of fond of JavaScript for a few years. Not used it in anger recently, but I used to quite like it.
Yeah. Okay, those are fair answers, given that you guys are mostly not Linux, so I appreciate that. But I would also get yelled at if I didn't ask those two questions of every guest that comes on now. So I hope you tolerated that a little bit there. Anyway, well, guys, it's been wonderful. We're almost out of time, so I have to let you guys go. But Tom and Dominique, thanks for having come on the show and talk about Monogame. I know a lot of interest already in the chat room about it, so a lot of people are probably going to come ask you questions.
Awesome.
Fantastic.
Thanks for having us on.
Thanks for having us on. Look forward to answering the questions.
Very good. That was Tom Spellman and Dominique Lewis representing the Monogame Project. What do you think, Guillermo?
Well, I like the project a lot. It seems very interesting for somebody with, you know, C# skills. I'm not one of them, though, sadly. But yeah, it looks like a really interesting project, and you can get your games out there. And if you already know XNA, there's no real, you know, limiting factor for you not to port your game already or start making a new one with it. That's good.
Yeah, I forgot to ask about what the competition looked like, but I'll do a little bit of Googling and figure it out and maybe put it in next week's show notes or this week's show notes. It's awesome how it started with a niche need and then sort of migrated forward. And we've seen a lot of this in the open source projects here where, you know, it's scratching someone's itch and then it sort of becomes this, potluck where people bring their own piece of the thing to it. And then it's greater for everybody like that.
That's right. Yeah. Everything started off like that. Maybe like KDE and GNOME, for example, two big projects that just started from somebody wanting to make their own type of, UI for Linux. So it's, you know, it seems to be the way open source projects grow out, right?
Indeed. So speaking of open source projects, we have only a few more already scheduled. I'm on Q1. I'm sorry about that. I was going to get some people out for Q2, and I just didn't do the email. I'll have to do it this weekend. I've just been really, really slammed with my current clients, keeping them happy. So upcoming next week, we have Typo3, which is an enterprise content management system, apparently fairly popular in Europe, not so much in the U.S., but we're going to be talking to some of the key people on the Enterprise CMS. And we have a new co-host coming in for that show. I'll leave it a surprise, but you'll have to tune in to find out. Yes, new co-host. And immediately following that is GNU Health. GNU Health is a top-to-bottom hospital or clinic management system. Includes everything from medical records through billing, through all sorts of interesting stuff, maybe real-time management, real-time alerting and things. And as an example of its use and its adoption already, Jamaica, the country, has totally committed to use GNU Health for all of their facilities. So we'll be talking to, I think, a couple representatives from that project. Following that, CoreOS, which is Linux for massive server deployments. And that's all I know about it because that comes off the front page of their website. On the really, really short list, still waiting for them to email me back, is the OpenShot video editor and OpenBlue Dragon. So they should be scheduled pretty quickly. Again, I'm continuing to schedule Q2. I'll get some email out this weekend and hopefully get most of Q2 filled in before I have to come back next week. You can always find out the status of how well I'm scheduling things by going to twit.tv/floss. That's our homepage for the show. And from there, you can drill down to the big spreadsheet that shows you how I'm doing. If there's a project that you want on the show that is not on that list, please have the project leader email me. So don't just tell me about the name of the project. It'll go down to the bottom of that list. I'll never get to it. I really want the project leaders emailing me. That's how these shows have all been happening recently. You can also follow us at Floss Weekly on Google+. And at Floss Weekly on Twitter. We have a live chat. We took a number of questions from that. There was a lot of discussion actually about what was going on the show today. It's at live.twit.tv. You'll see the link there. You can also use an IRC client to attach to it. It's at 8:30 a.m. Pacific time on Wednesdays is, in fact, when we typically tape. Now, if you're not in the U.S., we're changing daylight savings time next week or this weekend. So we'll be an hour spring forward. It would be an hour earlier, I think it is. Oh, God. Yeah, that's right. This is the wrong end of the year. And so be sure to check for that. It's a Pacific time U.S., so we're going according to DST that's happening here. You can follow me at Merlyn, M-E-R-L-Y-N, on Twitter, but more likely you'll see me as Randall L. Schwartz on Google+. I have about 22,000 followers, and I talk about various topics about open source, about freedoms in government sometimes, and about my ongoing health and my recent weight loss. So all good stuff there. I think that's all I want to say for plugging. Guillermo, what do you want to plug today?
Well, let's start with my Twitter account, which is G-A-M-A-R-A-L. That's mm-hmm. at Gamaral. And if you're interested in seeing my game engine, which is marshmallow.me, that's the website. You can just go in there and see a C++, you know, made from the ground up game engine for 2D games.
Awesome.
And it
sounds
supports,
great.
Yeah, it supports Raspberry Pi too. So
cool. A game on Pi games. Wow. I imagine Mono would be a little bit too big to run. Well, no, they're talking about it running on the Pi, right?
Yeah, and it does actually. You can run Mono and on the Pi just fine.
I mean, Mono game, the whole platform?
Maybe not the whole platform, but I'm guessing you could get it in there. The GPU is fairly fast for, you know, a tiny machine. And you can overclock the Pi a little bit.
Very cool.
Get something in there. Maybe just a 2D game, perhaps.
Very cool. Well, Guillermo, it looks like I'll be seeing you in a couple of weeks if you come on out while we're out playing there and down in your area. And thanks again for co-hosting the show.
Yeah, no problem, man. Anytime.
Very cool. Very cool. Well, I know I oversay that. I just got yelled at in the chat room for saying the word cool like way too many times. I am so sorry. That's not cool. Anyway, it's my show. I can do what I want. We'll see you all again next time on Floss Weekly.